Today's presenter is Stephen Webb. Stephen Webb is a member of the CICS Level 2 team in Raleigh, North Carolina, part of the Application and Integration Middleware Technical Support and Customer Services Division of IBM. He specializes in the web services area of the CICS product. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Stephen.
Good morning, everyone. This pitch is going to be on understanding URI maps, pipelines, and web services for KIX. And my name really is Steve Webb. I wish I would have had the foresight to drop a B and either copyright or patent my name, but hindsight is 20/20. CICS Transaction Server 3.1 first introduced web services support as we know it today. And this presentation is based primarily on CICS Transaction Server 3.2. Prior to that, we had the SOAP for KIX feature, which was available on Transaction Server 2.2 and 2.3. It will also run on Transaction Server 3.1, but we encourage customers to migrate to using the full web services support. So, Elijah, are you on the... Okay, there we go. Let's go to page 2 for the agenda. Going to be going over a quick overview of what web services are. You can think of a requester and a provider, and that will pretty much encapsulate what we're going to be just talking about today. Also going to talk about SOAP, WSDL, and WS Bind, and I'll define what those are a bit later as we go on. We're then going to talk about the pipeline structure for a web service, and particularly how it relates to CICS. We're then going to discuss some application considerations based on whatever environment you currently have or how you would develop new applications for your web services that you want to use. We're then going to hit the CICS web service resources that we have, namely four main ones, TCP/IP service, URI map, pipeline, and the web service definitions. And all of the examples in here are going to be based on the CICS Catalog Manager sample application, which is available and is supplied by CICS. And then we're going to talk a little bit about how to debug some problems that you may have, either with the sample application or once you get into the development of your own applications. So if we go to slide 3, what is a web service? You can basically think of it as a software system, which can be comprised of many different components, that allows program-to-program interactions or communications over a network. When you think of a browser coming into a CICS server, that is web support. Web services doesn't communicate directly with a browser. It communicates program-to-program. So it doesn't produce HTML that can be used by a browser, but it does produce SOAP messages that can be interpreted by a web service or another program. The clients and the servers communicate using extensible markup language, which is XML, and XML messages are exchanged using the Service-Oriented Architecture Protocol, or SOAP, which is also known as Simple Object Access Protocol. We can go to slide 4. The interface is defined by a web service definition language, which is referred to as WSDL, and that provides the details that are necessary to interact with the web service. And again, it's independent of hardware or the software platform. And let's go to page 5. There are two types of web service applications referred to as a requester or a provider. This sometimes causes a little confusion, but you can think of a requester being a web service that is asking for information or requesting information. If KIX was in this role, KIX would send an outbound request to a web service and would be acting as a client in this case. If KIX was a provider, it would be providing the information to an inbound request, and in that case, KIX would be acting as a server. We could move on to slide 7. I've included here just a real short SOAP example. And what we have is a SOAP message is just made up of name value pairs. The item reference number in this case is defined as a value or a name, and then the value would be 10. Quantity required, and then a value of 5, customer ID, Steve W., charge department, planning. So this type of message can be used by any application program. It could be written to understand this. It's not language dependent because it's just a name and a value. We can go to slide 9. Talk a little bit about WSDL and what it is. Again, it's an XML document that gives the specifications for the particular web service. The WSDL is something that you could use to exchange between your different application programmers within your organization, or it could be exchanged between different companies that wish to communicate back and forth using web services. And again, it's not tied to any particular programming language or operating system because it is written in XML. We could go to slide 11. Here's a short WSDL example. It's only talking about one name value pair in this case, the item reference number. And if you look down about halfway down the screen, you'll see a max inclusive and a min inclusive. So that just tells the range of what that value could be, either from 0 all the way up to 9999. Moving on to slide 13. To prepare for a web service, Kix provides a web service assistant. And this is our tooling that allows you to use two different approaches, either bottom-up or top-down. A bottom-up approach is when you have an existing language structure or COBOL copybook, for example, and you want to produce WSDL from that. We have a batch job called DFH-LS-2WS. The LS stands for language structure, 2WS is for WSDL. Using that, you can then generate the WSDL and exchange that with another programmer, and it's basically giving him your criteria for the web service. You could also give that to another company. Once they have that, they can develop their own back-end application to implement that. The other approach is top-down, where you are provided a WSDL document, perhaps from another application group or a company, and you produce the data structure. The batch job DFHWS2LS is used for that. Again, WSDL 2 language structure. Two PARMs that I wanted to mention for the, we're back on the first slide there. Okay. The RECMEM, R-E-Q-M-E-M, in the WS2LS job is how you specify where you want the request member copybook to be placed. And the response mem is where you want the response copybook to be placed. You can also use WebSphere Developer for System Z, also referred to as WD4Z. And on page 14 of the notes, there's a URL reference for that. And on the bottom, the last bullet. We can move on to page 15. Here's an example of what a bottom-up approach would look like. Again, this is from the catalog sample. We have a copybook, DFH-0XCP2. These are the fields that are within that. It's just a COBOL copybook. We move on to 17. After running it through the tooling, this is the WSDL that would be produced. Now, I've only shown a very small piece of that, only the item reference number, which we had seen before, showing again the min inclusive, max inclusive value. And this would equate back to the CA ORD item reference number, PIC94, that we had seen on the copybook. Moving on to slide 19. A top-down approach, again, takes the WSDL and produces a data structure or language structure of the copybook. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on that. It's basically the reverse process. So moving on to slide 21. One of the artifacts that CICS uses to connect the WSDL to the copybook is a WS bind file. And the binding is how we can translate from a SOAP message to the data structure and from a data structure to the SOAP message. It enables the inbound SOAP message to be mapped to the data structure and the data structure to be mapped back to the outbound SOAP message. One thing that's very important is the last bullet. The WS bind file must match the WSDL and the data structure that you are using. If you change the WSDL or the data structure, then you have to run it back through the tooling to produce a new WFBind file that matches. Otherwise, the mapping will not occur properly and you could run into many errors. I like to think of the bind file as like the glue that connects the WSDL specification to the high-level language. Moving on to slide 23, we'll talk about the pipeline structure. A pipeline is just made up of a series of message handlers, and they can choose to operate on the SOAP message or pass it unchanged to the next message handler. They're executed in a sequence, as you'll see later, and you can have different message handlers for HTTP or MQ transports. Those are the two types of transports that CICS supports. Moving on to page 25. Here's a picture of what this would look like. And in this case, I've only shown the server provider pipeline, but a similar thing would be pictured for a service requester. But a service provider, we have a service request coming into CICS, and it would go through the pipeline, going through each stage of the message handlers until eventually the KIX backend application is called. Once that's done, the response would be provided, and it would go back out through the pipeline in the reverse order, going through message handler 3, 2, and 1 to provide the response out to the requester. The final message handler is referred to as a terminal handler. It's responsible for turning around the request and producing the response back through the pipeline for the requester. Usually a terminal handler will take the request as input and pass this to a KIX application program. The application program's response will be used by the terminal handler to construct the response and send it back out through the pipeline. Moving on to 27. KIX, if you use the KIX tooling, KIX will transform the contents of the SOAP body to the application data structure. So that's not something that you have to do yourself. If you don't use the CICS tooling, then you would have to communicate directly from one of your message handlers in the pipeline to your application and do the mapping on your own. If you're using the KIX tooling, though, which is what I'm discussing in this topic, the WSBind file and the WSDL files are used for the mapping. And again, the tooling for that is the DFHLS to WS, WS to LS, and you can also use WD for Z. We do supply a message handler in the pipeline that will map the data. We move on to page 29. We'll see that. Same picture we had before for a service provider. In this case, if you look at the terminal handler, message handler 3, you'll see kind of a brain there, and that's the data mapper function that converts the incoming SOAP message to the application copybook that he'll understand. To do that, I've shown that it's using the WSBind file and in some cases the WSDL if you have validation turned on, which I'll talk about a little bit. To move on to slide 31, we'll talk about the business logic. I did want to mention if you're using validation for the WSDL, that is recommended to be done in test. We don't recommend that you would run with that in production because it is quite intensive. Okay, on 31 we have a picture of what your business logic may look like, and this is where the application considerations come into play. The top diagram, if you have your business logic well distinguished from your communication logic, there should be an arrow going from the communication logic to the business logic. I'm not sure that's showing up on the conference. If it's well separated out, the bottom picture shows that you can quite easily replace the communication logic with CICS Web Services support, and then it could interface directly with your business logic. If you move on to page 33, if your business logic is not well separated out, you may have to rewrite part of it or create what we call a wrapper program. And if you did create a wrapper program for a provider, It would receive the request and it would link to the business logic. If it was a requester wrapper, then the business logic would link to the wrapper program, which would then call a web service. Moving on to 35. Some cases where you might need a wrapper program are if the tooling that's provided with CICS or WD4Z can't generate code that interacts directly with your business logic. So either your business logic isn't well separated out or you have some data structures that aren't supported well, you may need to create a wrapper program that CICS web services can interact with. If you did that, you would need to create a data structure for the wrapper itself, and that would be the one that you would use the CICS tooling on. The wrapper would be responsible for manipulating the data for the business logic program, so it would take the data from the wrapper's data structure and process it into a form that the business logic would understand, and then it would invoke the business logic using the existing interface. We move on to slide 37. Quick diagram of what that might look like. You would have your, again, this is a service provider diagram. You would have your client coming in to CICS Web Services support. Your wrapper program then would link to the business logic application. And on the way out, it would map the data as well to the web service, and then the response would be returned to the client. Moving on to slide 39, going to talk about the CICS web resources that we have. These can all be defined with Resource Definition Online or CEDA. Some of them, though, we recommend if you use our tooling, we wouldn't typically define a URI map or a web service because, as we'll see later, they'll be generated automatically when you install the pipeline or when you do a perform pipeline scan command. Move on to page 40. First one I want to talk about is TCP/IP service. This has been around in CICS since we had web support beginning with version 4.1. But in this case, it's pretty much the same. We just have the main thing that we worry about in this is the port number. That tells the client how to get into KIX, and then KIX will listen on that port for activity. If you move to slide 41, which is one of the notes pages, in the example, catalog manager example, the TCP/IP service name is EXMPPORT. The port number that I used was 8021, so you'll see that throughout the presentation when I try to tie together these resources and how they all interact. Slide 42, please. The attributes on the next few slides are from a CEMT inquire on the specific resource, so in this case it would be a CEMT inquire URI map. Some of the attributes that you'll see, you can't specifically define on the RDO definition. They're picked up from the WSDL, the WS bind, the pipeline install, the config file, places like that. But I wanted to go through so you can see how they all interrelate. A URI map is required for a service provider. It passes the incoming request to the appropriate pipeline based on a URI or URL match on the path attribute. It's usually created automatically from a WS bind file when the pipeline is installed. If you look on page 43, some more notes for the URI map. In our example, the URI map we're going to be talking about is a generated name since it was installed when the pipeline was installed. And let's go to 44. The path is an interesting one. That is based off of the URI PARM that you specify in the KIX web tooling, the DFHWS2LS. It's mixed case. It has to match mixed case. And it takes the incoming URI, does a URI lookup, and matches, and then it knows which URI to use, which then it can tell which pipeline to use. So an incoming URI of example app dispatch order would match this URI map, and that's how we make the connection. Let's move on to page 46. Again, the pipeline name, we'll look at that later when we get to a chart of how all these connect. And the web service name are also specified on the URI map. Page 47, talking about the pipeline definition now. It's required in both a provider and a requester mode. There's a pipeline configuration file, which you can think of as basically an extension to the resource definition. That pipeline configuration file is an XML file that resides in ZOS Unix System Services, and it details the message handler programs that we had seen before, like message handler 1, 2, and 3. It also, the pipeline definition also specifies the location of the WSDL and the WS bind files. The URI map and the web service name are not on an RDO definition. That's one of the, or two of the parameters that aren't there. They're automatically built for all the WS bind files that are found in the WS dir pickup directory, which we'll talk about in a bit. We move on to 48. We show here the pipeline name, and the provider and SOAP level are also, mode and SOAP level are also not RDO definitions, but they are taken from the pipeline configuration file. This mode just basically shows us that this is going to be a provider pipeline. Page 49 shows the config file, and this is just the location of that config file. And within that, we'll take a look at what types of things you can have in there. But it specifies the details for the message handlers. The shelf is another important one. That is where the files are written. CICS will create the files, but it won't create the shelf for you. So you need to have the shelf created ahead of time. Moving on to page 50. The WSDIR is where the web services binding files are picked up from. So any binding files that are generated, you'll want to make sure that you copy them into your WSDIR that you have specified. If you're using the tooling, the WSDIR is something that you specify in the WS2LS job when you run it. Moving on to 51. The web service definition. It is required if CICS Web Services Assistant was used. If you don't use the CICS tooling, then as I mentioned earlier, your message handler in your pipeline has to communicate directly with your business logic or a wrapper program. And the web service is usually created automatically from the WS bind when the pipeline is installed. The program name is actually, in this case, since I'm using the tooling, is specified in the WS2LS job. It's, again, not something that you specify on RDO. And the parameter there is PGM name for program name. Move on to 52. Just wanted to show the web service name that we're going to be using in the sample. And also the pipeline name is specified here. Move on to 53. The URI map is also shown, and that's going to tie back to what we have. The program name, this is again the PGM name on the WS2LS job. That's the name of the program that actually is going to implement the web service. In this case, it's a KIC supplied COBOL program, and all it does is the order dispatch function, which is what I've gone through here. The program interface, which is, again, a PARM on the WS2LS job, PGMINT, that can be either COM area or container. I'm sorry, channel. So it just tells what the program expects the data to be in. Go to 54. The WS bind file there that we're going to be using later and the binding file. The binding file, you can have several bindings within a WSDL, but when you do a CEMT Inquire web service, we'll only list the first one. So if you have other bindings, there are different ways to see what those all are. Look at the WSDL itself, or as I discussed later, there's some graphical representations that you can have of the WSDL, and it would show you the binding. Let's go to 56. This is a pipeline configuration file that we ship as part of the sample. This is the provider pipeline configuration file. Basic SOAP 1.1 provider XML is the name on this one. There are several other samples as well, including one for a requester, and you can take these and modify them as you need. The provider pipeline element, which is up the second line from the top, just indicates that it's a provider pipeline configuration file. The service element, which is about halfway down, just specifies within that the message handlers that are going to be invoked for every request. And in this case, since we only have one, it's a terminal handler, and it specifies the KICKSOAP 1.1 as the handler that is going to be used. That equates to the KICK supplied program, DFHPISN1, if you were using SOAP 1.1, which I did in this example. If you're using KICKSOAP 1.2 handler, the program would be DFHPISN2. And the app handler element just shows the target application or a wrapper program. Let's move on to page 59. When you install a pipeline, CICS will create a web service and a URI map definition for every WS bind file that it finds in the pickup directory. The install is actually done. The install of a pipeline is actually done in two stages, which has caused some confusion in the past. With CICS resource definition, typically when you install a resource, if you get a good return back, you can rest assured that that resource is really installed. With a pipeline, the actual install of the resource may have completed okay, but then it goes through a pipeline resolution phase. And if something goes wrong with that, you may end up with the definition installed, but it may be not enabled. It may be disabled. You may also have a problem if it tried to install the web service or the URI map. Those may be disabled. So just because you get a good return code on the actual install, you need to check to see if your pipeline is enabled and that it installed the web service and the URI map correctly and that those are both enabled. If they're not, then check the log for problems. You may have to run a trace, perhaps, to see what went wrong with the pipeline resolution. Move on to page 61. This diagram, I'm trying to show how all these parts relate. When you install the pipeline definition, the URI map and the web service are installed if they're in the WSDIR pickup directory. And you can see that the arrows are supposed to connect the pipeline to the URI map and the pipeline to the web service. You can see in the URI map, for example, that we know what pipeline we were installed for. We also know the web service that will process this. And in the web service definition, we know the pipeline we were installed from, and we know the matching URI map. So this is how they all interrelate. The pipeline, when you install it, uses the WSDIR pickup directory, which I mentioned before, and it also uses the config file for the message handlers. Go to slide 63. This is the same type of picture, but just wanted to show what the inbound flow would look like. We would come in through the TCP/IP service with the request. That URI would be mapped, or matched, rather, to a URI map that we have installed based on the path. That would tell us which pipeline to invoke. So then we would call our pipeline EXPIP01. It would know the config file that's going to be used, so it would know the message handlers involved. And it also knows the web service. That's from the URI map definition. So it knows which web service to call. And in the web service, then, is the program specified that's going to produce the response that we need. Go to slide 65. This is just a graphical representation of what a WSDL can look like. It can help you with some debugging issues that you may have. This particular example was taken from Eclipse, which has a validation tool for WSDL. Also, WD4Z has this same type of function. So if you take your WSDL and you put it into one of these validation tools and it doesn't pass the test, then I wouldn't bother running it through the CICS tooling or the WD4Z tooling. You'd at least want to get it through the validation tool first. It doesn't necessarily guarantee that it's going to run through the WS2LS job without error, but if it doesn't run through the validation, then it won't go through the WS2LS. The small box in the middle at the bottom represents the binding, and that was the binding from the WSDL. The top box is an MQ, I'm sorry, the bottom one is for HTTP. The top small box that's not connected there is for an MQ binding, which I didn't really do in this example. Let's move on to slide 67. I've talked throughout this pitch about the Catalog Manager sample application. I highly recommend it if you are getting into web services that you first get the Catalog Manager sample working. You can flush out a lot of problems in your setups with this sample. You can trace it. You can see the incoming and outgoing flows. Definitely would recommend, highly recommend, that you use this before launching into your own application development. And you can use pieces of this to develop your own applications as well. It's KIX supplied, and there are many different, several different configurations that you can have. You can have CICS as a requester going to another CICS region as a provider. It could be in the same LPAR, different LPAR, it doesn't matter. You could have the same CICS acting as both a requester and a provider, so everything is within one KIX region. Basically, KIX produces an outbound request, turns right around, comes back in through a TCP/IP service definition and port, and then KIX in that case would be the provider. Provides a response back out, comes into the same KIX using the socket back to the requester. You can also use WebSphere Application Server, or WAS, and it can be a requester, and KIX could be the provider. We supply EAR files, or EAR files, to do this as well. And you can also, I don't have this on the foil, but you also can use WAS as a web service endpoint, where WAS can be the provider. And that EAR file, just for your reference, is example app dispatch order.EAR. The Catalog Manager sample application is quite well documented in Chapter 14 of the CICS Web Services Guide, and that's version Transaction Server 3.2. It's a different chapter on 3.1, but the sample is basically the same. Let's move on to page 69. Debugging. Probably the most useful debugging tools are Trace when you're working with web services. Trace can be either in a dump or standalone aux trace or GTF trace. It helps you see the flow that's coming in and going out. I have on the notes page in the presentation some recommendations for that. You can also use CEDF or CEDX to trace your application real-time and see what exact KIX commands are being done, what the processing is, that type of thing. Validation is also good. That's both, I'm talking about the WSDL validation tools that are available and also validation on the web service definition. The log file and job output that are produced from the tooling can be very useful. One thing I failed to mention is when you set up the tooling for CICS, you specify where you want the log to be written. So it goes to an HFS directory file, and you can look at that to see that everything completed okay. If you do have to report a problem to IBM, we've got some information items out there on our TS server support page. And there's also a document for must gather. So if you do have to come in to the support center, take a look at the must gather documentation for CICS, specifically the web services problem, and that'll give us a head start on any problem once you report it to us. Let's go to page 72. In summary then, we've talked a bit about the different web services components and what it means to be a requester and a provider. We've gone through the web service assistant tooling, which is DFH LS to WS and DFH WS to LS. Those are batch jobs, and also WD for Z. We've talked about some of the application considerations that you may have depending on how your business logic is separated and if you need wrapper programs. We've hit on the CICS web service resources. There's a lot that you could read up on that, and the primary books would be the CICS Resource Definition Guide as well as the CICS Web Services Guide. And again, we've hit the Kix Catalog Manager sample application, and again, strongly recommend that. We've also talked a bit about debugging. On page 73 are some references, again, the Web Services Guide, the Resource Definition Guide, and also the IBM Redbooks site is very good. If you just go to www.redbooks.ibm.com and search on Kix Web Services or Kix SOA, you'll get many books that can help you with your application design. One of the better ones that is most, I guess, applicable to this presentation would be the Implementing CICS Web Services Red Book. But again, if you just search on those, you'll find that. I believe it's the top hit if you search on Kix Web Services. Moving on to slide 74 are just some additional WebSphere resources. And this time, go on to 75. I'd like to open it up for any questions.
And we have a question from Pat Gwynn from GEICO.
Yeah, I was wondering if IBM has a recommendation on moving the Wisdom WS files between CFS structures, if you're going between LPARs or just different structure names.
I'm not aware of a recommendation that we have on that. There may be something in the implementing or architecting red books, but I'm not aware of a specific recommendation offhand.
Besides the web assistant?
Correct.
Okay. And I had a second question. If you have your bind files in multiple directory structures, like they're unique, let's say sales or billing or different structures, you can't then use the WSDIR to pick up those definitions. Can you create multiple pipeline definitions to point to those?
Yes.
You can't. And is there a problem with that?
No, there's not. The only problem is you can share a pipeline definition, but you can't share a pipeline definition as a service requester and a provider. That's the only restriction there. But certainly you can have separate pipeline definitions.
Okay, and so you'd have pipe 3, 4, 5, and they'd have a unique WSDIR to pick up the WSBind files and create the definitions.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
And there are no further questions at this time. However, I would like to give everyone one final opportunity. That is star 1 on your touchtone telephone. We will pause for one more moment. And there are no further questions. I'd like to turn the conference back over to our presenters for any additional or closing remarks.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Stephen, for presenting today.
Thank you, Elijah.